in the world than a Latina lady that does not sing correctly. And my church is full of them, okay? We sound like dying dogs. My wife's the best singer in church. I'm probably the second best. And I lead the singing, so that tells you everything you need to know about our singing services. We are pretty bad. But the Bible says make a joyful noise, not a good noise. So we are good. 2 weeks ago, we had a good song service. We sounded good. What I do is, because no one in my church plays anything, I'll go on YouTube. And it's so hard to find good YouTube songs that's not either incredibly boring or incredibly contemporary. So I search for hours. This is the hardest part of church service every week, is finding the right music. So 2 weeks ago, we found it, and we sang En la Cruz, at the cross. And we sang a couple other songs, and we sound really good. And I always try to find someone to sing with us. So I told Jen, I said, I think we're good enough. We can just do straight music. She said, you sure? I said, yeah, let's do it. It didn't work. It was awful. The dogs were running away from our church building, just howling. It was so bad. But do not take for granted. That is the first time I've heard English singing in about a year, and it was really good. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. But let's start with a word of prayer. Thank you, Lord. Thank you for this day of forgiveness. Thank you for all the people that are here tonight. I know how hard it is to get faithful people to come to a church. And thank you so much for that. Thank you for the faithfulness that is here. Please bless this time. I know it's not preaching, but it's more reporting. Please help me to be able to encourage someone. En el nombre de Jesús. Amen. Sorry, I cannot pray. I cannot finish praying in English. Amen. There we go. I seriously cannot finish praying in English. I had to finish in Spanish. So help me, Brother Byron Finney. This is actually, we have our home church in Toledo has a clothing designer in it. And he made these shirts for us. Brother Byron, can you please translate for me?
Sí.
Aquí. La camiseta. Mía.
With Christ. I cannot even.
Oh.
It's a pure.
Yes. There's a saying in Costa Rica, pura vida, which all the Costa Ricans say. It's like in Hawaii, they say aloha. So they say pura vida. It means hello, goodbye, everything's good. Cuss words as well. It means everything. It means anything you need it to mean. So we say, with Jesus, everything is pure. Or pura vida. And then our back is our church name. Byron? Brother Byron? Yes, Soldiers of the Cross Baptist Church. Because actually, so what we've been doing, I've been working in an area called Tiras for several months, but I just went there. I didn't really bring Jen and the kids. There was another man there. Oh, that's fine. I don't have anything else. I don't have us. But I did. I'm sorry, brother. But we've been, there was a man there that was running the church, and there's about 10 people in church. He did a really, to put it nicely, because I believe in speaking clear terms, he did a half-butt job. So he didn't teach him about tithing, didn't teach him about anything. He'd show up Sunday morning, that was it, boom, and he was gone. And so I didn't really care for that. But God had been working in our heart to start a church about 20 minutes away. And I told him about 3 months ago. I said, we're going to Concepcion, we're going to start a church there. God's put this in our heart. He said, okay. And then 2 weeks later, he told me, oh, I'm leaving. I'm going across the city, about an hour away. I said, what about the church? He said, oh, I'll come every 2 weeks, and the church will be fine. I said, the church is going to die. If you want to kill the church, go ahead. But I said, that's how you kill the church. He said, oh, that's fine with me. I'll just pray hard that it doesn't die. I said, Pablo, you're wrong. This is wrong. You can't do this. So a couple other pastors and I, we talked to him. Finally, he said, okay, you take it, and I'll just go my way. So we took it. There's about 6 weeks ago. I think there's about 10 people there when we left. And we obviously, with all my family, we had just doubled the size instantly. It was great. But last Sunday, it was really low. We had about 35, but we've been going about 40, 45. So it's been really good. Lord's been really blessing. We moved to a new building when they were here about 3 weeks ago. So it's been a real blessing. But it's totally different. It's 100% different than what you can ever expect. So like I told Dad, I did not ever expect a congregation like I have right now. I have maybe about 30 kids, about 12, 13, 14 adults, I think one man, and all the rest are just ladies. And Hank's not here. Mom and Dad have been up there. The area is just incredibly, incredibly poor. Like, dirt floor is poor. They don't have They don't have walls. Their walls are corrugated tin or wood or literal driftwood. They find the house, the place is built by a dump. So all their house is scrap metal, dumps. It's just, it's crazy. And they're very, very poor. All the ladies in my church are single ladies with three or four kids. The men don't come to church. So it's just been, it's something I never expected to do, but God opened a door, and it's been actually a blessed. It's been a blessed. The first week, Mom and Dad were there. It was crazy. Poor Jen had about 30 kids, and we have a couple that are, to put it nicely, fallen angels. But poor Jen has been doing good. We revamped it. She was teaching twice, two lessons a day in Spanish. And so I said, let's just do one a day, and we'll do crafts with other kids the other hour. So they've been great. But like this other man, I never taught them how to tithe. They've never taken a tithe. They've never done anything. So last Sunday, I had to preach about tithing. I am bringing up these people basically from babies. I have 40-year-old babies in my church. So it's actually fun. I never expected that. But we're doing Sunday school. We're doing it as a discipleship. And my people are excited. They're thirsty, and they're incredibly excited. They're incredibly excited. I haven't brought anything up. I don't want to push everything on them, like the typical American mindset. We got to do church this way, this way, this way, and this way. But they're bringing everything up to me. They said, "Can we do a Wednesday night service?" I said, "Sure." So let's do that. And then they said, "How about one time a week or one time a month we go out on visitation and knock on doors?" So I have very excited people. I mean, you don't really have people asking to do that. So they're getting all these things. And I preached Sunday on tithing. And I said, "I know you don't have any money." I said, I need to preach this though. And I said, "That's okay. We want to be a church. Teach us how to be a church." So thank the Lord, I have some very good people. I would ask you to pray for a lady named Anna. She's a wonderful lady. She's the best member of our church, most faithful member of our church. She has four kids. She had her first kid at 15, her second kid at 16, her third kid at 17, and her fourth kid at 18. Seriously. And she's just a wonderful lady. I honestly thought she was about 60. She's 45. And I thought she was that old. It's just life is so rough up there. And she has a son, Jimmy. I've written about him in some of my prayer letters. And he's a drug addict. And we took him to a center. He was getting cleaned up for several months. He was doing very well. And then he fell off the boat again. So she was texting me today. He's going back to a different rehab area tomorrow. So please pray for Anna. She's really going through the ringer. Her husband is a drunk. Her son is a drug addict. Her granddaughter, who she is raising as her daughter because her daughter had the baby at 14, is just running around. It's just bad. But she is a wonderful woman with a wonderful spirit. And every Sunday morning, I have to go to the top of the hill because there's a big top of the hill. Tirasas is the area. There's about 30,000 people in this barrio. And we're the only Baptist church. There's a ton of Pentecostal churches, a ton of Catholics, some Mormons, some JWs. And Sunday morning, Sunday school, I was teaching them going discipleship. And they said, "We have a question. What do the JWs believe?" I said, "What do the Mormons believe?" I said, "Why are you guys asking me?" They said, "Well, they've been knocking on our doors trying to get us to go to church with them." And we tell them, "You guys are crazy. We don't want to know, but we don't know why they're crazy." So I got to teach them why they're crazy. So it's been fun. It's been really good. But I just want to tell you some of the blessings I've been, because most of you know our story. Like, we left Panama because of health problems and stuff, and it was just so difficult there. God has really opened the door so much the last year in Costa Rica. We have so many open doors, so many people that we've made connections with, so many people we've been able to see saved already. So it's been wonderful. I want to tell a story. I know I write prayer letters. I know a lot of times they don't get read a whole lot, but people are busy and they're on the wall. So I want to share a couple prayer letter stories. Has everyone heard the story about the prison? The prison revival. Okay. So about several months ago, I wanted to be part of the prisons. So does anyone have Netflix? Oh, look at all you spiritual liars. You all have it. Just no one's admitting it. That's what it is. Okay, I don't have it either. Okay, I do. But there's this series called Inside the World's Toughest Prisons on Netflix. And there's one about Costa Rica. I thought, "Oh, that's pretty interesting." So I looked at it, I watched it, and I was in the process of getting in the prisons at this point. And then I realized, "Oh, I'm going in that prison." So I was going to there's two of them, the one was the better one. So I've been going to this prison. I told Carlos, the guy I'm working with, "So I want to get in the prisons, I want to preach." So Carlos is in charge of all the prisons in Costa Rica. He said, "Well, what's your background? What do you do? So I was telling him, you know, I did this. He said, well, about any sports backgrounds. So I used to do a lot of basketball. I'm from Indiana, you know. I'm a Hoosier. You have to like basketball. He goes, oh, I've been wanting to develop a basketball program in our prison. I said, okay, it's not what I wanted. I wanted to preach in the prisons, but God opened the door for basketball, so I went in there. So I go there every week, and, well, not now, but I have been going there every week, and they're just awful. I mean, like, I'm playing with, I have murderers there. I have all, everyone's in there for armed robbery. They all tell me they're in for armed robbery. It's a lie. They're all in there for murder. But they say armed robbery to make them feel better. So I'm going there with all these big, tough brutes, and they love me. They love me. And somehow they got in their mind, because I told them I used to be a basketball official, they got in their mind that I used to be in the NBA. And I said, guys, no, I never. And they're arguing with me. Oh, yes, you were. You know everybody. You know LeBron James and Michael Jordan. It's like, guys, I do not, okay? And they did not believe me. They still don't believe me. They still believe I was in the NBA at one point. But so I've been going there for months, and I'm thinking, Lord, so I don't, it's just basketball. I want to be preaching in the prisons. I don't like this, but I never really had an opportunity to go in and preach. And then one day Carlos told me, he said, there's this coach from Alabama. He was Charles Barkley High School basketball coach. He said, he's come down a couple years. He wants to do a clinic, and then we're going to preach at him. I said, oh, great. That'll be great. We can do that. So I said, finally, I get to preach there in the prisons. So we're there all week from 8 to 5, 8 to 5, from Monday to Friday. We're in there. And every day we go in there, we'll preach for half an hour, play basketball, have snack time, preach some more. And I was doing most of the translating, so all the white guys were preaching, and then I would translate for them. And there's one guy I noticed, he's only been there for about 3 weeks, 4 weeks. His name was Stephen. And I noticed Stephen. He always was kind of a loner, always sit off by himself, always kind of had a rougher attitude, rougher edge. And then one day, John, one of the other gringos there, gave him a testimony. He preached, and he said, all right, I feel like we should just do this. I feel what we should get in groups of five and just tell each other's testimonies, just real brief. So I happened to get in the group with Stephen and Coach. And I was translating for Coach, and Stephen was saying, he's 36 my age. He's been in jail for half his life and has 11 more years to go. I don't know what he did, but it's pretty bad. So he's still got 11 more years. And he said, I've been trying to get right. And he said, I just don't like the way I live. I'm fighting with everyone. I still smoke, do drugs here in prison, and I smoke and I drink. He's like, but I want to change. I want to get away from this. And I told Coach, I said, this guy's getting close to getting saved. And Coach said, you're right, he is. He goes, let's look for opportunity to talk to this guy. So they had about 50 guys. They're doing 5-on-5 scrimmage. And Stephen was waiting there, and I saw him. So I went and sat down next to him. And I started talking to him. I said, Stephen, tell me a little more about your background, your testimony. So he's talking to me. And I told him, I said, you sound like you're looking for the truth. He said, I am. I said, you're doing a good job. I said, you're doing a great job. You're staying away from the gangs. You're staying away from the drugs. I said, you're just missing one thing. He said, well, what's that? I said, you're trying to do it on your own. You can only do that for so long, but you're missing something else. And then, what'd you know, his turn to play basketball was up. It was his turn to go. He takes off his jersey and said, I don't want to talk. I'm talking to this Mai. Mai is how they say dude down there. He said, I'm talking to this Mai. We're not. He said, we're going to go over here. So we went and talked for 45 minutes on the side of the court there on the bench. And we're talking and talking. I said, Stephen, I said, all you're missing is Jesus Christ. I said, you're so close. So you're just missing Jesus Christ. I said, how do you become a Christian? Tell me. He goes, good works. I said, no. No, I said, that's not going to work. He goes, give money? He's like, nope. He goes, go to church. I said, how are you going to do that? You're in prison. I said, you're out of luck there, buddy. And he said things. I said, you're so close. I said, you're missing Jesus Christ. And I told him how to be a Christian. He goes, what are we waiting for? Let's do it right now. I said, okay. So there's like 50 inmates around us. And this man bows his head and prays in front of everyone that he becomes a Christian. It was fantastic. But this is a Thursday. This is the beginning of the day. That was just the start of a great day. Because we'd go till about 4 o'clock. Then we'd have a prisoner give about 10-minute testimony. And then we'd leave. And that night, this guy named Anthony got up. Big old tattoos. There were gunshot wounds in his... He's got bullet wounds in his arms and his legs. Big old... He looked like some rap guy. I never know. I don't know who he is. They call him Drake. I have not a clue who Drake is, but he looks like him supposedly. I don't know who he is. That's his nickname. So he's up there, and he's giving this 20-minute message or his testimony. And we're like, shut up, Anthony. Shut up. It's supposed to be 5 minutes. And all of us preachers were just going nuts. and he's wearing this rosary around his arm. And he gets up, and he after 20 minutes of him talking and talking and talking, he goes, "I've been in prison for a long time, so I have this rosary on my wrist. So I've been trusting this to keep me safe in here. I've been trusting this to keep my family safe while I'm in here. I've been trusting this to save me." He goes, "I've been listening to you guys preach. We were preaching out of Jeremiah and the potter." He goes, "I've been listening to you guys preaching." He goes, "This is a lie." And he takes the rosary off, throws it on the ground, says, "I'm getting saved right now. Anyone else that wants to come up and join me, come on up." And all this preacher, "What in the world's going on? This is an unsaved man giving an invitation." And eight guys walked up with him, and they all got saved. It was fantastic. So it actually still gives me goosebumps. So a lot of them are in there for life. And they said, "We want to get baptized. So we got to get baptized." So we brought it in a pool the next day, an inflatable pool, fill it up with air, fill it up with water, and baptize those guys, baptize those murderers right there in the prison. It was fantastic. So nine of them got saved, and a couple others had been saved that hadn't been baptized yet. We baptized about 10 or 15 of them. I mean, they all just have tattoos up and down, stab wounds, bullet wounds, guys with dreadlocks. It's just total change. And I went back about 2 weeks later, I saw Stephen. And because Stephen was kind of like my pet. He's my guy. I led him to the Lord. He's my pet project. So I said, "Stephen," because I hadn't been there about 3 weeks just because it got busy. I said, "You still reading your Bible?" He goes, "Every day." I said, "You still praying?" He said, "Every day." He said, "My mom sent me a bunch of material to read." He said, "I'm trying to read it and learn about Jesus." I said, "I got material too." He said, "Bring it." He said, "Bring it and I'll read it." So this man's on fire for the Lord. And I know sometimes there's that prayer, that prison religion, where you're getting near the end and maybe God's going to help. This guy's got 11 years left and he knows he's not getting out. This man's on fire. So please pray for Stephen. I wouldn't say he's a good man because he's in prison for who knows what, but he's a baby Christian that just wants to grow, and he is a real blessing to me. So I ask you pray for Stephen there. What else? Other Steve. Oh, my friend. Oh, okay. There's another Steve. He's an American. He's actually my dad's age. He's probably my best friend down there in Costa Rica. He's nothing I'd ever associate with in America. His hair is down to here. He's a fantastic man. He comes from a background, a real rough background, abuse, all kinds of abuse. He was a drunk, a drug addict, and a fisherman. He got saved one day on the boat. And he said, "I'm going to go." And he got saved one day. I think 2 months later, he said, "I'm going to go to Costa Rica and be a missionary." Poor man doesn't know anything about the Bible. He's a construction missionary. He builds houses in the area where I'm at and helps everybody. So he told me, he said, "I've never once read through the Bible." He said, "I want to do that. Will you help me?" And he has severe dyslexia. He can't read. I said, "I would love to help you." So we go. He comes to my house once a week, and we go through the Bible. And so he does it. He'll listen to the Bible because he can't read that well. So listens to, and then he'll come back and tell me what he learned. And he'll tell me stories, and listening to his stories is, here's his story about Abraham, about God telling Abraham he's having a baby. He said, "Well, one day there's three angels talking to old man Abraham, and said, 'You're going to have a baby someday.' And Abraham's like, 'I'm too old, my old woman's even older, that's not going to work.'" That's his version of the story. He goes, and his version of the story of Moses was, well, one day Moses was walking along and saw someone putting a wampi on someone, he got mad, so he put a bigger wampi on him and wampied him too hard and they died. So, but he's just someone who's just a real blessing to me. He told me one day, he said, "I don't really have any aspirations. I just want to go fishing with Jesus in the creek one day." I thought that was a good aspiration. I just want to just hang out with Jesus someday. So pray for him. He tends to suffer depression just because of his background and his best friend just died. So he's been going through a real dark valley. But he'll call me about once a week. He's my dad's age. And he says, "I'm his best friend in Costa Rica, and he's my best friend in Costa Rica." So, and the first time I saw him, I thought, "Who in the world is this guy? He looks like Steven Tyler. He looks just like Steven Tyler from Aerosmith." Who in the world is this guy? And God has just opened up a great friendship, and we've been able to be a blessing to him. And he's learning. What else was I going to say? Oh, yes. This is the first time in a long time I've actually preached without a dog running into the building, or talked without a dog running into the building. Our church, every Sunday, Dad was there. He heard it. Well, first of all, we were up on the top of the hill, and it was literally a one room, probably half the size of the platform, one room, with about five holes in the ceiling, which doesn't work well when you're in rainy season when it rains 10 hours a day. No classrooms for the kids. There's no nothing. So I would preach inside. Jen would go outside with all the kids. And not to be gross, but there's dog poop everywhere because there's a billion dogs. So the first day Jen got there, she stepped there. She stepped right outside the door to go teach Sunday school and just stepped in a big old fresh pile. She was so mad. She's like, how am I supposed to be spiritual with dog poop in my shoes? But there's, I mean, broken beer bottles everywhere, glass, needles, just everywhere. And we've been up there, we were up there for several weeks, and we moved down to the bottom of the hill. And I told my people, I said, we're going to move to the bottom of the hill. I will come up to the top of the hill and grab you. That way, because it's about a good 15-minute walk down, straight down a hill. And it's a hill. I mean, for us Indiana people, it's a mountain. It's like K2, okay? It's a mountain. So I go up there, and I thought, because Latinos are incredibly, no offense, Brother Byron, wherever he is, Latinos are incredibly unreliable. So I thought, if I go there, I have to go to each of their houses and call everyone and say, let's get here. So the first Sunday, I texted them, the church group. I said, I'll be there 9:45. I said, please don't make me come get you. I got there. Everyone was sitting there waiting, dressed in their church best, waiting for us. And I piled 20 people in my vehicle, and we flew down the hill. I said, let's go without the brakes. So we're going like that. So we went out, and they're there every single week, just waiting for me at the top of the hill, just excited to learn about Jesus. So they're a real blessing. But we're at the top of the hill. There's always dogs, because the place is, it's what you'd imagine a ghetto to be. There's always dogs walking in. So I'd be preaching, I'd go, shh. That's how they yell at dogs down there. They go, shh, shh, like that. And the dog would run out, and you keep preaching about 5 minutes later, shh, shh, and the whole church is doing this, shh, shh, like that at the dog. And then someone would come by, Mamma Gino, Saboya, Mil. Selling onions and carrots and potatoes and everything every Sunday. Then you'd wait, okay, he's done. Then you start preaching, and he'd come back 2 minutes later, Saboya, Papa, Mil. So we all sit there and wait again. Then he can go back down. Then we start preaching, and then a motorcycle would go by. Like that. So this is actually nice and quiet. I really appreciate it. And then a kid would run in. And then every kid would run in crying because every kid hit him with a board or something. Always. I have a good friend. He's not that good a friend because he's a Cardinals fan. Sorry, Derek. His name is John Tinkle. Yes, his real name. He helped me up there several weeks. And he told me one day, he said, I just feel like someone's gonna stab me today. And then, true story, a kid brought a knife to Sunday school, going like this with it. And John said, put that away. But it's just, God's opened so many doors, and the people love us. They love Jen, they love the kids. Each one of our kids has a little buddy. And they just love all of us because they know that we love them. And we're just showing them, we're not doing anything special. We just go and show them that we love them because they are the scum of Costa Rica. They are from Nicaragua. They're from El Salvador. They're from Honduras. Everyone says, oh, Tirases. We've actually had several people tell me. I've had several people outside tell me, if your church wasn't in Tirases, we'd go to it. But this is the dump. This is where people get murdered. Someone got murdered in front of our church about three months ago. They shot him right outside our church. Fortunately, it wasn't our church at that time. But we just show the people we love them. And they love us back, and church is growing, and they are just growing and loving the Lord, and just, it's been a blessing. It's been a real blessing. And it's kind of weird to me tonight. I feel like half American. They say it's a book called Third Culture Kids, where everyone is green. We are now green people. Like Americans are blue, Costa Ricans are yellow, or whatever country it is, are yellow. And we are green right now. We don't fit in with America. Totally. We don't fit in with Costa Rica totally. We're just kind of in this green area. So it is kind of weird. You do feel it. I feel it. The kids feel it. Jen feels it. But you feel it. I feel that God does that so we can love both. So we can. And I know as Bible-believing Baptists, love isn't our isn't our forte. It isn't. But God has just told me, go in there and love those people. Love them and teach them. And it's kind of weird coming here. Joe, I saw Joe, and he stuck his hand out to me. I was like, man, I'm Tico now. We hug. If you know me before, I hate hugs. Especially for my mother-in-law, I tried avoiding them at all costs. I'd hide in a different room just because I hated hugs so much. But now we hug. Actually, people kiss. They do the cheek kiss there. They don't actually kiss. So it's kind of weird to me to actually say hi to you without cheek kissing. It's really, really, really weird to me. I prefer it, though, because everyone there picks your nose. Everyone from the richest people to the poor, everyone, men, women, children, everyone picks your nose. And then they want to shake your hand. So they're like, nah, we're not going to do that. We're going to do the cheek kiss, okay? We'll do it. Everyone picks your nose. It's really gross. It's incredibly gross. But all these kids come and hug me. Every single kid in church hugs us. Hugs me, my wife, the kids, everyone. Afterwards, I'm incredibly curious how many boogies I have on the back of my pants. I just go and just throw all my clothes directly in the wash. She's like, okay, these are for later. We're going to clean these up. But it's, guys just open so many doors. So we have the prison ministry. We go to the kids' home. We have the church going. It's been going strong. We want to, we still have the heart to go start a church in the other Concepcion area. But I just didn't think it was wise to split my focus into two areas right away. So we're going to focus on Tirases, and then I'm going to focus on Concepcion maybe another year or so. So I'm not sure when we're going to do furlough, maybe another 2 years. But it's just been wonderful. And I mentioned Dad bought me a big banner to go street preaching. So I'm comfortable enough now in my Spanish where I can just yell. I yell at people all the time anyway when I'm driving. It's because you're such bad drivers there. Grandpa was driving. I drove with Dad and Grandpa. And no one honked the horn in 10 minutes. I felt really out of place. It's like, where are the horn honkings here? People need to honk the horn, and people need to yell at each other. This is how we drive in Costa Rica. Right, Dad? He even got in the act. He was honking a little bit down there when he drove. I was proud of him. I was really proud of him. Jen says I honk too quick, but that's okay. Dad got me this big old thing to go street preaching. So I mentioned to my church people, I said, I have this sign where I want to go. I'm going to start going street preaching. And they told me, tell us, we want to go too. We want to go pass out tracts and go do that too. So they're just excited to grow in the Lord. Do you have any, did you tell them about the walk? Did you tell them or no? Well, I don't want to, if you already told them, I don't want to tell them. I don't want to repeat. Okay, every year, August 2nd, I think Dad told a little bit. It's called, I totally forgot what it's called. It's La Negrita, the little black. It's a little black doll. So they all, 3 million of the 6 million, don't, I see you smirking, Donnie. 3 million of the 6 million people walk 23 kilometers to pay for their sins every year. And the most devout ones will crawl the last 2 kilometers on their hands and knees to pay for their sins. And they pass, what, 5 blocks from our house? So Mom and Dad were here. We walked out. We just formed like a line. It was great. We formed a line. We passed out tracts to everyone that walked by, or as many people as we could that walked by. And it was just a wave upon wave upon wave. And they never stopped. I mean, just coming. And then you run out of tracts, and you reach in your pack to get more tracts. And 50 people walk by, and you missed them all. It's just that. But it was exciting getting the tracts out, but it was actually incredibly sad. So I actually wanted to cry, to tell you the truth. I'm not really much of a crier, but standing there, I'm watching all these people. Like, man, they're quote-unquote good people. They're religious people that want to do something. They're trying to pay for their sins. And this thinking Catholic church has convinced them, hey, if you walk 23 kilometers, that's going to get you to heaven. It's so frustrating. And you see that, and then we run into that. And it's easy in Central America to get people to pray. I don't do that. Because anyone can walk up and say, oh, pray this prayer, you'll be saved. And they'll say, oh, okay, I'm praying. It's very easy to get them to pray. But I don't do that because I don't think that saves them. I don't think the prayer saves you. I think it's the faith in Jesus Christ. It's the belief. The prayer, the words don't matter. But these people will pray, and then they'll think they're saved. But honestly, all they're doing is just adding another God. It's just like you're praying to Mary. Just like you're praying to this, praying to that. And it's very frustrating. So I don't try to get people to pray so much. I try to get to know them a little better. If I ever meet them, I don't ever rush them to prayer the first time. Just because everyone prays there. Everyone prays. And I don't really want to give them a gospel injection. You know, I have a little bit of the gospel, and I'm fine with it now. I don't need to go to church. I prayed a little prayer one time, and I got saved. It doesn't work that way. So and Latinos are incredibly emotional. So, oh, it sounds good. And they'll pray, and they think they're saved, and then you never see them in church, and they're not actually ever doing anything. And then you wonder, are they actually saved? Or is it just like a fleeting thought? Oh, okay, that's good. You know, I'm happy there. So it's a little bit different. I don't rush people to pray. I don't rush them to do that. But, oh, that's what it was. In February, we did a fantastic thing called La Casa del Juicio, the House of Justice. There were 7 churches involved, and it was just fantastic. We had about 1,000 people walk through. And what it was is a play, much like you guys put on the play. But what it is, it's not, instead of just one stage, we had an entire school campus. And these different churches would do one scene. So our scene was the funeral. But so it was a traveling scene. You get a guide. He'd take his group of 30 people. They go to the first scene. Then they'd walk to the second scene and walk to the third scene. And it was a scene about a man, a mom with her three kids, and the mom and the son get killed. And the mom was not a Christian, and the son was. So they walk from play to play, and they invited the entire neighborhood. About 1,000 people came out. And it was an incredibly convicting play, because they'd have a scene here, a scene here, a scene here. Like this, a little restaurant, a house, a party where the person got shot, the hospital, the funeral, which was ours. Then they had a scene of judgment. It was where the person died. So, but what they did is they took down every person's name in that group. So it'd be like Abby Sokolowski, Abram Macinas. I'm sorry, I do not know your name. Callie Mac something or other. What is it? Macklemore, sorry. I haven't gone for like 10 years, okay? But so they take down every person. They Paul Richardson, Debbie Richardson, and that 25-person group. And they'd go and they'd put the lady that was in front of the group that wasn't saved, and they'd show her getting judged. And they took her off to hell, screaming and screaming. They showed the son first, excuse me, and he went to heaven happy. Then they showed the lady going to hell, screaming and screaming. And then the judge read each person's name. And they say, "Your time hasn't come yet, but it will come. And what's your judgment going to be?" And then they turn off the lights, and send the next. They push the next scene. They send them to hell, where they have like a little tombstone, and the one daughter, the surviving daughter and son, are crying. "Oh, mom was such a good person. I'm sure she's in heaven." And right behind her, right behind those two, they have the mom screaming in hell with a man dressed in a mask as a devil, saying, "Oh, keep yelling, keep begging, and just going." It's incredibly effective. And everyone just standing like this. And then they close it, and then they go to the last scene where it's heaven. And and then they take them after that, and they go and preach to them. They set them in a group of 20, and they preach to them for about 15 minutes. And we had about 1,000 people come through that. And this is 100 people, no, it's like 150 people made professions of faith. I don't know how many got saved, but even if it's just one, it's still worth it. But for one weekend, from a Thursday to a Sunday, it's probably the most incredible event I've ever been a part of. It was fantastic. It's fantastic. That's some of the stuff that God's been allowed us to do there. Got about 5 minutes. We'll give a funny story called Lost in Translation. So I work with a guy named Lamar. All right, I'll help him out. He gets all. He's a Baptist. He's a little more liberal than I like, but we're still good friends. We know we have our differences. He knows I'm more conservative, and we're fine with it. And we don't go to church together. But we'll do activities together, and I'll help him. So he had this medical group going in Tirasas where he had the church. And I think they had about 500 people go through in one day, where they go through their medicals. Someone with a cold or something, they'd come through, and they'd talk to a doctor, and then they'd go get an eye exam, get a little massage, and then go to one-on-one person dealing with them for evangelism. And I originally was supposed to be on the evangelism team. And Lamar came to me the last day and said, I'm short one translator. I need you to help this nurse and be her translator. I said, I don't know all the medical words in English or in Spanish. I'm not a doctor. I don't know. He's like, please, what do you do? I said, I really want to be part of the evangelism team. He said, well, I need you. I said, okay, fine. So I'm going, and all these people are coming through, and these people are coming through. And then one lady comes down. She starts rubbing her stomach. She goes, tengo un ardor aquí en mi estómago. It's like, what's this word, ardor? It's like, I don't know what this word is. And she's rubbing it. And the nurse said, well, what'd she say? I said, I think she can't go to the bathroom. She goes, okay, we'll give her laxatives. Okay, that sounds good. So the next, the few people are going, oh, tengo un ardor en mi estómago. It's like, oh, it's got to be constipation. Said, she can't go to the bathroom. The next lady comes, tengo ardor en mi pecho, in my chest. I'm like, that's a little weird. That doesn't sound like constipation. And the nurse said, what did she say? I said, she has constipation. And there's so many people, I didn't have time to look up this word. So finally, there's a break. I looked at, oh, it's heartburn. So hopefully that's a good side effect of the laxative she gave them. So there's always good. There's always fun things in the mission field as well. But did you have anything else you want to say?
Tell us about your schooling and what you had to do with the liberal aspect and how
Well, we like to think that every missionary is called of God, and I'm sure they are. And we like to think that every missionary is a great person. Unfortunately, that is not the case. I'm sure Donnie can attest to that as well. Actually, some of our biggest obstacles on the field are other missionaries stabbing you in the back, trying to steal your work, trying to steal whatever you have, which is crazy. I would think that we should all be on the same team, but that's all right. People don't see it the way we do it. So we went to this language school a couple years ago, and we didn't really have culture shock when we went there, but we had spiritual shock like crazy. We sat there, and first thing we noticed was the music was just, whoa, and then all the missionaries are covered in tattoos, and all the missionaries are drinking. What in the world is this? We thought we were, so we very quickly got ostracized, because I am a good Baptist, and I don't know how to keep my mouth shut when things are annoying me. So I hounded on them a lot for their drinking and their way they lived. But it's surprising. It's really surprising how, and it's really crazy, because one missionary, these were not all Baptists. These are not Baptists. But the school we went to, I was under the impression it was a Baptist school. It was not. It's for all groups. But one guy was there to start a church. But how he started his church was he opened up a bar and he talked to people as they were drinking so he can win them to the Lord. And he was the bar owner. So that's a little bit weird. So honestly, the mission and our Baptist mindset, our Baptist bubble, yes, we're church planters. We do this, we do that. That's not the case. And there's so many weird, there's another guy, nice guy. He talks like Crush from Nemo. If you know what I'm talking about, that's how he talks. His name's Lalo. Come on. That's how he talks. He's a missionary to the skateboarders in Costa Rica. I'm dead serious. First time I heard him, I was like, are you serious? Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, we go out and I witness the skateboarders and we do cool tricks together. It's like, and someone's actually supporting you? And he's got a lot of support. He's been there about 15 years. He's about dad's age. He's got hair to his shoulders, and he's a missionary to the skateboarders. So I guess everyone has their niche. I prefer not to have that as my niche, but that's okay. Anything else? I think that's about it. Do you have any questions about living outside of the country? I know Dad told you all about my wonderful... Don't ask me that. I don't do math. I don't either. Dad said, I live in America. I don't have to do kilometers. Kilometers, it's 0.6 miles for 1 kilometer. So roughly 15, because I won't do that much math. 15. But I think Dad told you about our wonderful police stealing my license plate ordeal. That was a lot of fun. Any questions about living out of the country? Has anyone actually lived out of the country before? You have, well, on the Army base, right?
No.
Oh, really? Oh, really? Okay. Where at? Okay. See, but those are nice countries. Okay. Do you have any questions about living outside the country, weird stuff or culture stuff? Yes, sir. Dígame en español. Okay. Yes, they do. It's nice. So when it's raining, you can go as fast as you want to. Yeah, they do that. They'll hide underneath the bus stops and look at their phone. They'll just kind of look up. But, that's it. So yes, they don't. Honestly, they're not too bad, only when they feel like stealing your license plates. So anything else? It's just stuff you don't ever think about. Like here, your light bills do. What do? You go online and pay it, right? There, I have to go in and pay it in cash with my number. I have to walk to a grocery store, and I have 2 days to pay it. If I don't pay it at that time, then they shut your lights off. And sometimes your bill's not ready in time. Because I've gone there and said, my bill's due today. I need to pay it today. They said, oh, it's not ready yet. You can't pay it. I said, they're going to cut it off tomorrow if I don't pay it. Oh, we'll come back tomorrow then. I said, then the lights will be off. It's just that kind of stuff all the time. Same with water. Yes? Do you have a question? Yes, ma'am. I went back to the bank 4 times, waited in line 4 times at the bank. Finally, the 4th time I was able to pay it. I went with Dad twice to the, it's called COSEVI, it's the ministry where They steal your plates. It's a nice way of saying we steal your plates. And we waited. The first time we went, what time we got up? We got up at 4:15 in the morning, waited in line for an hour, and they said, oh, we don't do that anymore. You have to make an appointment without telling us. So then we made an appointment and went back a second time. So it's what, 12-day process? It is 10, 12-day process. It is a bunch of junk, to put it nicely. Anything else? Are we good? All right. Oh, sir. Do we have traffic lights? Yes, but no one obeys them. You just go when you want to. Just hope that no one actually hits you as you're going. You just look and you just honk the horn really hard. That's all you do. And if you get an accident, you just yell louder and you win. It's the truth.
Motorcycle.
The what? Motorcycle. Oh, the motorcycle just drive between. I'm sure if you've anyone's traveled out of the side of the country, you know how they'll drive right in the middle of you there. One time I stopped and picked up my friend John at the bus stop there to go up to church. And this lady in the motorcycle flew right around me, and so I didn't really pay her attention. So I'm sitting there looking at John, talking to him, and he gets in the car. I put the car in drive, and apparently the lady decided to stop directly in front of me. I didn't even see her, and I hit her. And I stuck my head down and said, what are you doing? She goes, I'm so sorry. And she got in the car and drove away. So I learned the role of yelling louder than they did. But that's just driving over there. She told me her motorcycle broke down, so I don't know. But it started up pretty quick. I think that's about it. Should we pray? All right, Lord, thank you for this day you've given us. Thank you for my brothers here, my brothers and sisters here in Christ. Thank you for their generosity, because they do help us. Because of their generosity, we are able to go down to Costa Rica and be a light for you. Please help us to not just think about our desires. Lord, please help us to follow your will. Please help us to be a light, no matter where we're at, no matter what time of day, no matter what day, no matter where we are. Please just help us to be good Christians, a good light for you. If it is your will, in your name, amen.